A world chess champion sits across from a mysterious stranger aboard a ship bound for Buenos Aires. One is a crude savant who can barely write his own name. The other is a refined Austrian lawyer with prematurely white hair and trembling hands. Between them lies a chessboard and two utterly different relationships with brilliance. This is Stefan Zweig's final masterpiece, written in 1942 as Europe burned and the author himself stood at the edge of despair. What unfolds is not just a story about chess, but a haunting meditation on what happens when the mind becomes both sanctuary and torture chamber. Mirko Centovic defies every romantic notion of genius. At 14, this orphaned son of a Yugoslav bargeman could barely read and still counted on his fingers. Then, while silently watching a chess game, he corrected a mistake, revealing a gift that existed in complete isolation from all other intelligence. Within months, this boy who couldn't compose a grammatically correct sentence was defeating every chess player in the county. Within years, he became world champion. Yet Centovic remains profoundly ordinary beyond the 64 squares. He approaches chess not with passion, but with mechanical efficiency, charging substantial fees and playing with the emotional investment of a factory worker operating machinery. His genius raises an unsettling question. Is a gift that exists in total isolation from broader understanding truly genius at all? Or is it simply a neurological quirk, a mind programmed for one specific task? When wealthy Scottish industrialist McConnor challenges Centovic aboard the ship, wounded ego drives him, not love of chess. He embodies a familiar type, the man accustomed to buying success who cannot tolerate defeat, especially from someone he considers inferior. He pays Centovic's exorbitant fee, expecting to prove his superiority. Centovic methodically dismantles McConnor's position with machine-like efficiency, but as defeat looms inevitable, a soft voice interrupts, "I wouldn't do that if I were you." The speaker, a distinguished, pale gentleman with prematurely white hair, is Dr. B, an Austrian lawyer. His suggested move transforms the game from hopeless to competitive, drawing a rare eyebrow raise from the champion. This quiet intervention introduces the novella's central tension. Dr. B's chess knowledge flows intuitively, almost reluctantly, as though emerging from some deep internal reservoir he'd rather not access. When told he'd been playing against the world champion, his hands tremble and his eyes grow distant. Something about chess disturbs him profoundly. Dr. B's story reveals psychological torture that anticipated modern interrogation techniques by decades. After the Nazi annexation of Austria, the Gestapo arrested him not for his actions, but for his knowledge. As lawyer to the Austrian imperial family, he held information about hidden assets. Rather than physical brutality, his captors employed something more insidious, complete isolation in a hotel room converted into a cell. "Nothing was done to me," he explains. "I was simply placed in complete nothingness. No books, no paper, no conversation, no stimulation. Four walls, a bed, endless hours. Time dissolved without external markers." Dr. B paced obsessively, four or five steps each way, his mind desperately seeking patterns in carpet fibers, creating elaborate walking rules, anything to impose order on the crushing void. The section brilliantly conveys psychological disintegration. Dr. B splits into two selves, one asking questions during imaginary interrogations, the other answering, a desperate attempt to create dialogue in silence. The actual interrogations become almost welcome breaks. What emerges is a profound meditation on consciousness. The mind cannot tolerate emptiness and will create content, even destructive content, rather than face the void. Dr. B's rescue comes through theft and obsession. Left alone during interrogation, he impulsively steals a book of 150 annotated master chess games from a coat pocket. Though he knows only basic rules, this book becomes his lifeline against mental disillusion. With methodical determination, he teaches himself chess. He tears pages into scraps hidden in his mattress, recreates positions on his bedspread using breadcrumbs as pieces, and develops blind chess, the ability to visualize entire games mentally. The 64 squares become his landscape, his society, his universe, a space where imagination finds unlimited room despite physical confinement. Chess provides exactly what imprisonment denies: structure, meaning, and the exercise of will. Yet this salvation carries dangerous seeds. After mastering all 150 games, boredom drives him to play against himself, splitting his consciousness into white me and black me. This cognitive compartmentalization, initially a creative solution, gradually undermines his sanity. Playing chess against oneself sounds clever until it becomes dangerous. To play effectively, Dr. B must maintain complete separation between his two chess selves, each planning strategies unknown to the other. Two distinct brains formed in my skull, one playing against the other, he explains, and this deliberate division gradually takes on disturbing autonomy. He wakes at night shouting moves, his mind continuing games during sleep. The game consumes everything. He forgets to eat, neglects hygiene, experiences dissociative episodes. During an interrogation, he can no longer distinguish between his chess selves and his actual self, attacking his interrogator while shouting moves. This breakdown leads to hospitalization and eventual release, with a clear prescription: complete abstinence from chess. This chess poisoning reveals disturbing truths about obsession and consciousness's fragility. The very activity that preserved Dr. B's sanity ultimately threatens it. His experience suggests that even the most beautiful obsession becomes destructive when it consumes all other aspects of consciousness. The mind requires balance, connection, engagement with a world beyond its own reflections. Despite his doctor's warnings, Dr. B agrees to play Shentovic, describing it cryptically as a chance to put paid to an old account. The contrast is stark. Shentovic sits broad-shouldered, thick-necked, staring fixedly at the board, treating chess as mechanical labor. Dr. B moves naturally, relaxed as a true dilettante playing for pure delight, approaching it as artistic expression. Dr. B plays magnificently, but Shentovic's deliberate slowness, a professional tactic, increasingly agitates him. After nearly 3 hours, Dr. B announces "finished" with triumphant certainty. The champion concedes defeat by wordlessly sweeping pieces from the board, but Dr. B eagerly agrees to a rematch, unable to resist chess's intoxication. His behavior grows erratic: trembling hands, feverish movements, impatient outbursts. During the 19th move, he erroneously shouts "check" when the king isn't threatened, then becomes confused about piece positions. Recognizing impending breakdown, the narrator reminds him of his doctor's warning. Coming to himself momentarily, Dr. B apologizes and withdraws, stating, "This is the last time I will try my hand at chess." This ambiguous ending reflects Zweig's own uncertain position in Brazilian exile. Dr. B represents cultivated European tradition, humanistic, nuanced, sensitive, while Shentovic embodies limited but effective intelligence thriving in rigid systems. Dr. B's victory suggests humanism's enduring power, but his breakdown reveals its vulnerability against systematic brutality. Your mind can be both sanctuary and prison. The key lies in maintaining connection beyond your own reflections.